the earth. Thank you for all your abundant gifts. Good morning, Father, Son. Thank you for feeding all living things on earth. Thank you, Plant Kingdom. Thank you, trees and plants, for converting the sun's light into edible foods that we can consume and digest, and for providing oxygen in the air that we breathe. Good morning, water. Thank you for being 75% of our body. We are one, and we bless you and protect you because we cannot live without you. Good morning, Animal Kingdom. Thank you for your companionship, your beauty and splendor, and for your sacrifice of life so that we may eat and live. Thank you, Great Spirit that moves in all things. Thank you for our lives and for the opportunity to be here and to be of service in this sacred earth garden of life. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hello and welcome to Shaman's Keep. This is Caroline Wise King, your host, and I hope all of you had a wonderful Thanksgiving and that this is a great weekend for you. I have a wonderful guest with me today. His name is Joe Mullally. He's an Irish shaman with a healing center just outside of Dublin City, Ireland. The center is called Anam Spirit Center, and he teaches workshops in dowsing and divining, Tantra yoga, angel healing therapy, Celtic shamanism, making and using flower essences, and land healing and energy networks of sacred sites. So his knowledge covers a vast range of spiritual subjects, and he also shares a lot of his wisdom in his book, The Healer's Secret. So thank you, Joe, for joining us today.
No problem. It's great to be talking to you.
And how are things at the Anam Center today?
Yes, everything is very good. Working in shamanism and in this, you know, with the land and with people here in traditional ways, there's always something new happening. So, you know, every day brings us new experiences. Different people come by with different situations, and of course, then working in the traditional path, there's a lot of sharing. So everybody who comes, you know, or people come along who have their own experiences, and then, you know, I'm sharing mine or people are sharing theirs. And it's a very interesting, amazing lifestyle.
Oh, I'm sure it is, because it's as people are waking up, they are connecting with spirit and receiving so many revelations about life and what our priorities should be, and just a whole new way of looking at life, a new perspective. Tell me something. Yes. What the name of your center, Anam Spirit, what does Anam mean?
Yes, I chose the word because it's very powerful. The word Anam, spelled A-N-A-M, is the Irish, the Gaelic word for spirit. So So Anam is Irish, and then the English word is spirit. So it puts the two together to get Anam Spirit. So it's the word for spirit or soul. Now, the other traditionally interesting thing is that the Irish word for name is also Anam. It's spelled slightly differently, but it's pronounced the same. And I think it's incredible because in traditional terms, knowing something's real name is to know the essence of their spirit.
Oh, yes.
And so in the spirit world. Is there in the world as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes a lot of sense, because we know that in the spirit world, to know the name of the spirit you want to call is very powerful. So we don't share names we know with other people or with
in
the public. Tell me a little bit about Celtic practices, because I know each culture there are slight differences in the way shamanism is practiced.
Yeah, that's true. Well, to me, the actual, you see, I know that I would go by the term Celtic shamanism, and you actually have read out a number of different things there. And sometimes people listening to all those different areas, they think they're vast and diverse. But in actual practice, from my point of view, shamanism is very much the traditions and working in the traditional way of the culture that one is born in, or the culture that is calling to one's heart, if you like. So in Ireland, I happen to be, you know, I'm native Irish from that sense. So, and I'm very connected. I grew up on a farm here, so I've been very connected with the land. So really the local customs and traditions and superstitions and, you know, the fairy realms and all those things and the standing stones and sacred sites and circles and all the traditions that are associated with them would have been part of my, you know, my normal life growing up. So the traditions then, the actual ways of working, are almost deceptively simple. And a lot of it is to do with the idea of, you know, substitution, that's having a surrogate. So, for instance, you know, using stones and objects or to use transference, say, for illness and things from one thing to another, and then maybe burying it in the earth. Those types of traditions, which are very old, but which are found actually in other cultures in other ways. Also, the flower essence traditions over here are very, very ancient as well. So using flowers and plants in the sense of the spiritual essence, as well as in the herbal properties, that's very much part of the work as well.
Mm-hmm. So you do work with herbs a good bit?
Yes. Now, I don't work as a herbalist. First of all, from my point of view, my own practice, and this goes back to my own childhood and my relationship with the land, I suppose, is very much land-based. So though I work with people, I would come from a lot of my teachings and a lot of my experience has been from the land. So, for instance, in terms of working with plants, I would do a lot of work healing place, and a lot of that work is around things like having a look at the plants that actually grow in the place, and some of those plants, if we make remedies from them, will be for the healing of the place, which is why they grow there.
Okay. Yes, there's an innate wisdom in plants, and
absolutely.
I've mentioned it before. Yeah, I've mentioned before on this show that sometimes plants will come to a person that has an illness like asthma. There's a plant that grows in the desert southwest here in the United States that will actually show up in their yard. And it's almost as if the plant knows that the person there needs it. Unfortunately, so many people don't recognize it as a, you know, a useful plant, and they pull it up because they think it's a weed. but I've seen this happen over and over again, where a plant that someone needs will show up in their area, you know, in their yard.
Absolutely.
So it's amazing.
And even deeper than the fact that they don't recognize the plant itself is the fact that we have long since come to not recognize the coincidence. If we actually, like from a shamanic point of view, shamanism is really walking in full aliveness with the world, in full aliveness with the earth, and almost in a very close intimacy with life, so that we actually see the coincidences that show up. So if a flower starts suddenly blooming around a garden that wasn't there before, we looked at maybe there's a reason for that rather than that we're being blighted by it.
Yes, and it's amazing.
And when we, you see, one of the difficulties in modern cultures is, well, in the Western world, is we all grow up with the scientific mindset. Now, we're taught this from childhood, and it's kind of ingrained in us by the time we grow up. And even if we're working in traditional practices or in traditional therapies, we're inclined to bring it with us. The scientific mindset says that something is valid by virtue of the fact that if you do the same thing in the same way, under the same circumstances, you should always get the same result. Mm-hmm. And scientific work throws that out unless that happens. Now, you know, even in holistic terms, I come across people, I've done it myself in the early days, and if, for instance, we had a vision, and in that vision a certain elder comes to us and says his name is Joshua or whatever, we'll be on the internet tomorrow Googling the name to see if we've come up with anybody else who has had that experience. And if that happens, you know, we'll be elated. And if it doesn't happen, we may put it down to our imagination, whereby from a traditional perspective, the traditional way of being in the world and of looking at things is completely different. In traditional terms, any visions or anything that we come across, we look at it and we judge its validity or not by virtue of the results it gives us. So if this Joshua says to a traditional person, you know, if you put your hands on a person's head and, you know, you say yum, yum, yum 3 times, they'll be cured of any cancer growth that they have. If you actually do that and it works, it doesn't matter if nobody else has ever heard of it before.
Absolutely.
Yes, but the difficulty in the modern world is people don't have that trust. They don't do that. They actually look for the qualification by experts or somebody else first before they trust their own heart.
Yes, we've been trained, programmed, so to speak, to expect that you have to have credentials to be able to be a healer.
Exactly, and you do, but from a shamanic perspective, as we know, the credentials don't come from outside teachers. The credentials come from the spirits we connect with inside. Outside teachers are very valuable. Well, they are valuable if they accompany us and encourage us on our own personal journey rather than bringing us on theirs. And if they do that, we'll connect with our own heart within and with our own spirits and our own way of doing things, which is why we're called to the work, to actually share who we are. And in that way, then, our credentials are our results. Our credentials in the world are results. There are many traditional healers here in Ireland who have never attended a Reiki workshop, never gone anywhere, but from childhood, they've been recognized, have certain abilities by virtue of the results they've got, and people throng the roads to their houses every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure it's the same with native healers in the States.
Well, there is some hesitation in the States of people to trust someone that is purported to be a healer. They have been so programmed that ask your doctor, see your doctor, have your doctor check this and everything. They've been so programmed that way that if you're not a doctor, then they are suspicious of it. And
the interesting thing about that for me is I applaud that, right? I think mm-hmm. that's perfectly healthy. But I think that the interesting thing is that for any person, well, the experience over here is that for most people, when it comes down to it, when a person is in trouble, and if the medical profession isn't helping them, and everybody should seek out medical advice, there's no difficulty there whatsoever.
Yes.
Well, then they're open to the other possibilities. And the other interesting thing is, if there's no point in them seeking it out, because unless they approach it with an open mind, it has, you know, traditional ways have very little possibility of working for them.
Yes, I agree, because, you know, it comes down to the power of belief. And if they don't really believe that it will help or that it can be the answer they were looking for, then they're not going to accept it, you know.
Yes, that's absolutely true.
Right. They will still be clinging to, well, I have to take my next medication at such and such a time, and I better do this, so I better not do that. And, you know, they have become so enmeshed in the medical perspective of whatever is going on with them, that they can't get past it. They can't let it go. And
That's quite true. Yeah. I have found as well as that in sharing with traditional herbalists here in Ireland and others from abroad, that they have a difficulty often that sometimes, you know, people come to them and then they will give them a herbal remedy and the person will go home and they'll, you know, if they have a pain in one eye, they'll automatically blame the remedy where it could be something else. And it's very difficult when the practitioner knows it's nothing to do with that remedy. Unless the person has the trust in them, it's very difficult to dispel that.
Right. They have to be able to accept that they can be healed. Yes.
And, and they have to have complete trust in the person who's working with them.
Yeah. They have to be open to accept it and receive it.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like people that receive a gift. You give someone a gift, and right away their mind is thinking, oh, dear, she gave me such and such. Now I have to give her a present. What should I get?
Oh, my God.
You know? And so we have to learn to receive things gracefully and just be able to say, oh, thank you. How wonderful. Thank you. You know?
That's right. And that actually goes into something else, which is to do with a person's love of themselves. If a person really feels that they're lovable, and then it'll come easy for them to receive. I often share with people that there's two ways of being in the world. One way of being in the world is where we feel our worth as a person is in the service we can be to others, in doing things for them. And that's very much a work ethos, and it's a very general one. But the other way of being in the world is where we feel that our spirit and our divine presence is so beautiful that beauty is its own. That beauty is our worth in the world. So when we feel that sense of preciousness, then we can understand how it's a gift to others to give to us, just the same as it is for us to give to them.
Yes, that's true. Because if you truly love yourself, then you want good things for yourself, and you can accept gifts graciously, and you can believe that good things can come to you. You know,
correct. And you can see what comes as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And all life is a gift, because your own beauty is a gift. It's a gift both to you, and it's a gift to everybody else. It's like when we work shamanically, our service is a gift. It's such a gift. It's not like it's interesting and that when we live who we are in the world, it's no longer work. It's actually the greatest pleasure we have is in sharing that, and that's what it is. It's a sharing.
Yes, absolutely. I live that. That's my belief, is that I'm here to be of service. I'm so happy to be here and be of service. And I give thanks every day for that. And it's just a pleasure to be able to help other people. And
it's the greatest pleasure we have is in actually sharing who we are.
Yes, I agree with that. Tell me a little bit more about your how you enter the spirit when you're doing healing work. I use drumming. You know, some places they use hallucinogenics. Some places they have other methods of, you know, obtaining that altered state of consciousness.
Okay. Well, from my point of view, in the beginning, right, I used to use drumming. Okay, by and large, I used to use drumming, and with people whom I teach, I also work that way with them, in that we'll do drumming. And one of these things in the early days, just my own experience, right, is that it was important to actually create a delineation. So in other words, when I was drumming and when I did my ceremony and when I set up my sacred spaces, I was moving into the world between. I was moving out of the mundane world and I was moving into close connection and spirit and the other worlds.
Yes.
As I became more experienced and as the year rolled on, I dropped a lot of that. So it's like, you know, it's like, you know, in one way we talk about the shaman as walking between the worlds, but for me it's walking mm-hmm. in all the worlds. So it's not that, like, the spirits and the energy and the earth and the whole lot, it's around me all the time. It's just an extra dynamic in the world in which I walk. I may tune into it more or less, and I need very little to do that, but I don't have to separate the two anymore.
Right. Well, I understand that. I still use the drumming and the setting up sacred space and calling in the four directions and doing the prayers and all. And I do it, as you said, part of that is to move myself into the right frame of mind and into the right energy. But it's also because sometimes the people that I work with really need to see the ceremonial part of it, and they really
yes,
need
absolutely.
To hear the prayers.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it makes, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that totally, but it's just that when you were asking my own personal experience, mm-hmm. my understanding and impression is that quite a few people who are listening to this broadcast will already be familiar with shamanism, so it's okay to share that level. Of course, that's the truth. And a lot mm-hmm. of the ceremony we do, the important thing is to connect with everybody where they are, because and it's mm-hmm. not that their level is deeper or shallower than ours, it's just different, and it's to honor that difference and to share. One of the beautiful things about shamanism, I find, is that we're in there sharing the space with a client, with the person we're facilitating, rather than leaving them in their space and we stay in our space. And I think I love that sharing and that intimacy and that companionship almost on the journey for their healing or whatever we're doing with them.
Exactly, because they do need to participate, you know, in the healing and be part of it. And
yes.
So it's very, you know, there are many different ways of working, but sounds like you work pretty much the same as we do here.
Yeah.
You also do angel therapy. What is angel therapy?
Yes. Now, first of all, yeah, angel therapy, really in terms of shamanic therapy, standard shamanic practice, mm-hmm. we work with the spirit worlds. So the angel mm-hmm. world is part of the spirit worlds. The animal spirit mm-hmm. world would be another part of it. But mm-hmm. in Ireland, and also because of my own, I suppose, my own background in my young days I would have been brought up in the Catholic tradition. So therefore, mm. you know, I had a very close relationship to angels and Jesus and Our Lady in particular. So that mm-hmm. vernacular is, you know, in my past is very close to my heart. In my younger days, when I came to my 20s and that, I would have had a lot of contact and learned an awful lot from what I call earth-based traditions or pagan traditions. And I still hold it, and a lot of that's very close to my heart as well. But I have found that in Ireland here, people are more open to the idea of angels. It's much easier mm-hmm. and it's much less threatening. One of the things about earth-based traditions, like shamanic traditions, is they bring you very close to, they very much extol the instincts and extol the earth part and the physical part and that wonderful organic part of our nature. But often mm-hmm. for a lot of people to go there, that's quite threatening. Whereas from the angel's point of view, it's much easier, and that's why mm-hmm. that's where the angel therapy comes in.
Ah, okay. Yes, I work mostly with animal spirits, power animals, and mm-hmm. People. I have found that here in the U.S., many people have moved so far away from nature that they don't feel a closeness with animals. Like there was once a time when there was, you know, when people were more on the land. Now so many people are in large cities, and away from nature and they just don't feel that connection. So it's something I have to work at showing them how, you know, the nature of whatever an animal it is that comes as their power animal and how this will help them and how, you know, and often they will tell me, well, that's just like me. I have those kind of feelings. That's how I handle life. And I say, well, that power animal's probably been with you a long time and you just weren't aware of it because, you know, it just wasn't part of your day-to-day routine. So it's everything's a learning experience, isn't it?
It is, and exactly so. The other thing that's actually happened, and we're left kind of dealing with this as well, is there's been a lot of negativity put about through advertising and through the modern world mindset with regard to nature. I remember a number of years ago, and I talk about this a little bit in my book, there was a study done with people to find out why the people who weren't buying organic produce weren't buying it, to see from a marketing point of view how that could be improved. And what they found was that the number one reason was that people thought organic produce was dirty. So the more that they advertised the fact that it was grown in wholesome manure and organic ways, was the more people felt it was dirty, because people have been frightened and sanitized to the extent that they expect, yes, you know, bottles of bleach to be marching into the loo to zap every germ, and if one germ and all these surfaces in these places are all made of unnatural materials. So the idea of being in nature is very discomforting to many people. And a lot of the work we do is in helping to heal that.
Correct. Yes, we have to bring people back to nature, because that's the problem I see here. People are so afraid of dirt and germs. It's like you can't hardly even go on a picnic. They're like, oh, we have to cover that table. That's who knows what's been spilled on there and who's touched it,
yeah,
or, you know, and oh, don't touch that. That might be dirty. That might have germs, you know. And this fear of germs has just become ridiculous to the point that you know, I said, my goodness, were we once a spaceship kind of people that had to have everything pristine and clean and nothing from nature entered there or what? I mean, it's like our ancestors came from somewhere else and we are like, ooh, nature. Ooh, that's dirty. That's scary. You don't know what's out there. Ooh, you know, and it just seems funny to me. I grew up on a farm, and my best friends were trees and animals. And
that's it. Yeah, that's right.
You know, it gives us a completely different viewpoint. But people that have grown up in cities or have lived a large part of their lives in cities and concrete jungles, they've lost their connection with nature.
That's true. And the difficulty is then also that when that happens, they lose their connection with the reality of real life in a big way. One of the things I notice is that very few people are willing to see the truth of it, that they come up from the earth, and when they die, they go back to the earth.
Yes.
And in actual fact, as humans, we're walking, talking pieces of earth. I mean, there's this perception people want to hold that they come from somewhere else, that they're not from the land. The other interesting thing is that a friend of mine shared with me that they were at an exhibition in Washington about 20 years ago. This is now, it's a long time since they told me this story. And they said the exhibition was about the history of the universe from the Big Bang to the present day. And there was all these three-dimensional displays, and they could have these interactive things of exploding stars and everything else, and they said it was fantastic. But the thing that blew their mind the most and had a long-standing impression that they never forgot was that there was a big corridor down to the exhibition hall, which was 100 yards long. And along that corridor was a ruler. And on that ruler was marked all the stages of existence from the Big Bang to the present day. The Big Bang was zero, the present day was 100 yards, 100 meters, whatever the length of the ruler was. And all the stages were marked, you know, the first star systems down to the first, when the Earth came to form and the universe here, and then the first life forms on Earth. And then at the very end of the ruler was a section that marked the whole of human existence from the first creature that looked like an ape up until the present day. Mm-hmm. And I often ask in my workshops, I often ask people, and the listeners might just pause for a moment and just think what perception they have of what fraction of that 100-yard-long ruler that the whole of human existence was represented by.
Mm-hmm.
In actual fact, in order to represent it, they suspended a human hair edgewise at the end of the ruler. So the whole human race has only been in existence in comparison to how long the Earth and the universe has been here, for the thickness of a human hair. And yet we as a species are so arrogant that we think, you know, the Earth is here for our use and benefit or something like that. It's totally crazy.
It is, and that's led to so much destruction of the Earth because mankind somehow thinks that they are meant to be in charge here and everything is just here for us to use. And
that's right.
They forget that everything else is alive, too. Just because you can't hear the tree screaming when you cut it down doesn't mean that it's not a living entity there. You know?
Yeah, the other funny thing is that all the emotions, I mean, one of the epiphanies, if you like, the first epiphany I got, which actually brought me into the way I do my work, is that I realized in a profound way that places were the same as people, that the land, each different place has a personality, each house, each mm-hmm. garden, they all have personalities which are just no different to people. In actual fact, the personalities that we as people have are reflections of the land because we came up from the land. The mm-hmm. unique thing, though, about us as humans is that we have self-awareness, self-perception. So whereas a horse out in the field is blissfully eating grass and sitting in the sun, he doesn't really see himself there doing that. Whereas a person is self-commenting on everything within their own mind. They have this perception of themselves. Now, because of that, we, the earth, the land and nature can see itself through our eyes. It has its self-awareness through the human race. So that's why in a very real way, how we treat places and so forth will have a big determination on how they feel about themselves. And that has big consequences one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it certainly does. You're right. Everything does have a spirit. I found that even a home, a house, has a spirit.
When people
have lived there a while and that spirit has grown to love them and protect them and cherish them and everything, there's a thing that happens with a house that is suddenly left vacant and it seems to suddenly begin to fall apart and people say, well, my goodness, that house isn't that old. But once the people leave, the house begins to kind of crumble. And I think it has something to do with that spirit that, you know, is
absolutely
part of the house.
Sometimes also, if the person and the family have had a long relationship with the place, if they leave the place, if they just willy-nilly pack up and leave, even though they go to another place, they may have melancholy from, you know, they may never kind of get over the place, and the place may never get over them. And this is really because they haven't done proper ceremony, which is just saying goodbye to the place and letting places know. One of the things about traditional societies, and Ireland here, we're very much a traditional people, we're not that long off the land, is that it isn't that they didn't do things and build things and knock down things, but there was this reverence for telling the earth or telling the place what they were doing. And that's been lost, and it creates an awful lot of confusion in places and houses and lands and everything, and also in people.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. That's an interesting perspective. I have become aware that we need to be communicating with nature instead of, in traditional, like Catholicism, you thank God for the trees, but you don't thank the trees directly. And this is the what's happened with the disconnect. I think people have forgotten to thank the trees themselves, or thank the plants themselves, or thank the sun for shining on us and feeding everything on Earth. We've forgotten to have a direct communication with all of these support systems that provide.
People have lost sight of the fact that the trees are God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the trees, the plants, the expression around us are God. That's mm-hmm. the point. You know, there's a lot of talk, you know, in prayers, you know, where is God not? And God is in everything. But a lot of that stuff is spoken from the intellectual mind rather than people having a felt awareness of what they're saying. If somebody feels the sacredness of the earth and they feel the utter sacredness of every single plant, then they won't trash the world they live in. If they don't feel that and they treat things as inanimate objects, they will.
Yes, and I think nature feels it very strongly that a large portion of the population has ceased to see, recognize them as living brothers and sisters on the planet, that they've become inanimate objects to us. And so there's a tremendous a hurt and a sadness. And,
That's true. I think, you see, the interesting thing is that from my perspective, I've seen it in Ireland and I've seen it in other places where I've been. There's another thing that happens, which is that it's not, people are not separate. So in a really deep way, the people of a place are reflections of the energy of the place as well. So the earth has a very strong impetus in all this too. So for instance, from my experience and my awareness of it at this stage, like it's like through the human race and through the species on the earth, that the earth is learning to love herself. The earth is seeing herself. So the conflicts that go on within people and nations and different groups in different areas are also reflections of conflicts in the consciousness of the land.
That's one
of the things. Yes, one of the things I noticed was, I'll give you an example, right? Down in Clare a number of years ago, there was a number of towns, and what happened was with the expansion of the EEC, the European community that we're part of, a lot of other countries were added. So we ended up in Ireland getting a lot of immigrants, which we're not used to, and their cultures mm-hmm. were very different. Now, with these immigrants, while they were, you know, while it was decided whether they were to be allowed to stay or whether they were to be allowed, you know, whether to be sent home or whatever was to happen, they were located in different towns in Ireland. And mm-hmm. and in the west of Ireland, in this place called this County Clare, a number of them were located. But the local population down there actually were annoyed, because of course there was an influx of different traditions, and there was all sorts of, they were, of course, like everything else, they weren't told about it. They woke up one morning and this was there. So, but I was fascinated that at the same time, there was these headlines in the paper about a foreign weed that had come off a ship in the Shannon and was actually crucifying all the land down there, and the landowners were having to actually go after this weed with a vengeance. So it's like what was happening in the land was what was happening in the people.
Yes.
I also find it interesting that within nature itself, if you look around at the way, America, I'm sure, in the States, you have the same difficulties here. The biodiversity of the landscape has reduced considerably because it's all kind of mechanized farming now. So you've acres and acres and acres of, we'll say, the same plant grown. So you don't have the biodiversity, and a lot of species have gone out, like a lot of wild plants have disappeared off the landscape. But at the same time, what's happened is we have cultural diversity disappearing, because one of the difficulties in the people of different places is because of the mass media, people are all speaking the one language now, having the one lingo, listening to the one music, buying the same products. So that diversity is disappearing at the same time, and I find that interestingly coincidental.
Oh my goodness, I hadn't even thought about that. The United States is so diverse that we still have a good bit of diversity here, with areas where they speak other languages and have other customs and all.
It's so wonderful.
We are pretty much being programmed by television to all speak a certain way. What's happening that I notice is the dialects in certain parts of the country are kind of disappearing because now everyone sounds like a radio announcer or a TV newsman.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they're all talking that way. And so the dialects from the South and from other areas have kind of disappeared. But the biodiversity as far as plants go, that's frightening to me because I see in the cities where they people come in and they choose from maybe one of 20 trees that are popular in that area. And they say, oh, I want that tree in my yard. And then they want lawns and they want specific plants that are popular. Oh, so-and-so has that down the street. That's really pretty. I want that in my yard too. And so there's no such thing as biodiversity in the cities anymore. People plant a few specific plants, and everything else is eliminated. And
that's right.
You know, and you go in the forest. I was last month. I was in Colorado, and I was up in the mountains, and everything was growing there. And all these different diverse plants side by side. I mean, there would be a wild weed here, and a yarrow there, and a and a wild strawberry there, and they're all just kind of jumbled together, but they're all growing happily. And
right. The other thing is that in a situation like that, there's a mutual relationship between the plants. There's an interconnectivity, and it also shows a happiness in the land.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yes.
One of the things, if you see a little child and the child is happy, a happy child will be beautifully creative and spontaneous. And in those circumstances where wild plants are allowed to grow like that, that the land can be creative and spontaneous as well. I always encourage people when I'm doing land healing that they set aside a small part of their holding. And even if somebody's living in an apartment, they can set apart a small window box just to allow that spontaneous creativity rather than deciding everything that goes into it.
Yes, exactly. I believe that is so true because I keep a corner of my backyard that is kind of it looks unmanaged because I just let it be wild. But that's for the nature spirits and for
and the teaching in it and the surprises and the wonderful, you know, the interest of what grows there and what doesn't. It's just amazing.
Mm-hmm. And
there's very
profound
teaching in that. Mind you, there's also very profound awareness to actually do that. That's a very strong connection with the land you have to actually
do that. Well, we have to honor all the other beings, you know, and the nature spirits need their space too. So
yes, they do.
It's really important.
Yes, they do. Yeah. Another thing is that underneath all that, one of the things that I'm actually involved in is a thing called Tantra Yoga. And that's quite mm-hmm. fascinating because Tantra Yoga is really a branch of yoga. Now, in its traditional form, it's very close to shamanism in that they've all these gods and goddesses and all these practices for working with spirits and working with energies and different things. But there's also a very strong, and this is kind of focused on in the West, there's a very strong emphasis on male-female relationships, on the male-female polarity. And, you know, sometimes people actually hijack a lot of it to, you know, to use for, if you like, sexual practices designed to prolong orgasms and things like that. But underneath that is the reverence of the spiritual nature of man and woman and the masculine and feminine, which is very, very powerful. I remember a number of years ago, I was sharing with some people from the UK as it happened. And one of the things that they had known that I was kind of searching for at the time was it's you know, to do with this connection between people and the land. You know, where I was looking back to see where the people had lost that sense of reverence, where they had started treating the land as an object and ownership rather than just, you know, feeling that they were custodians of the land and part of the land. And what mm-hmm. these people, there were two women, said to me, and they said they knew what the answer to that was. And the answer was that mankind started disrespecting the land and treating it as an object when man started disrespecting woman.
And it was well, that goes back a long way.
Yes, but it's such an amazing awareness, because if man doesn't if that respect for the woman who is before him isn't there, then respecting Mother Earth won't be there. And so in a large way, from my own perspective, the healing of mankind's relationship with the earth is the healing of man and woman's relationship. When that relationship is honoring, respectful, close and wonderful. Like, in other words, for instance, you'll see it, people who have that between partners don't disrespect the land.
Oh, okay, that's so very interesting, because I always, though I don't know that much about Tantra yoga, all I've really heard about it is that it's mainly about sex and achieving, achieving a sublime connection with spirit.
I know.
The orgasm.
I know.
So it's interesting to hear you talk about it as a healing of a relationship between man and woman and respecting the woman. That's awesome.
Yes, it is awesome. But it's a very important awareness, because from a man's perspective, woman is his deepest, you know, like she's the goddess, she's the deepest representative that he can feel of his spirituality. Mm-hmm. The deepest spiritual experiences in any tradition, anybody who describes them always described them in sensual terms. So that, you know, that connection, that if the authenticity is there in that realm, it's there everywhere else.
Mm. Okay. Well, you know, in ancient times, they worshipped the goddess. And everything was connected with the goddess, and the earth was seen as the mother goddess. And
also in ancient times, people shared their sensuality with the land. That's where you had, in Ireland especially, you had fertility rites and May Day and all these things, right? And mm-hmm. the land loves that sharing. Not in terms of people being naked and jumping up and down or whatever, but in terms of just the tenderness, in terms of the warmth, in terms of the intimacy, in terms of the preciousness and treating place and everybody else as sacred. It's a way of being in the heart. It's actually true heart connection with everything.
Mm, that's beautiful. Well, we certainly need more of that. We are running short on time, Joe, so I want people to know how to reach you. That's at www.anamspirit.com.
Is that correct?
Okay.
That's correct.
And you have a wonderful book, The Healer's Secret, which I think you've shared a lot of wisdom in, and that could help a lot of people if they will read that. They can purchase that on your website, right?
They can, yeah. They can get it. They can get an ebook version, which they can. I can give them a link to download straight away, and I can also send them a hard copy if they want. No problem.
Okay, wonderful. Well, I've certainly enjoyed having you on the show. I would love to have you again, because I think we have just touched on the tip of the iceberg here. There's a lot more we could discuss. So perhaps sometime in the future you would be a guest again. I would really like that. Okay.
I'd love to do that, of course. And
all
maybe
right.
you'll make your way over to Ireland sometime, so.
I hope so. I'm still planning to do that someday. Okay, well,
good.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Joe. And,
you're very welcome.
And we'll keep in touch. Thank you. And thank all our listeners today. Have a wonderful weekend. And as you go out on your weekend, take some time to sit with a tree, enjoy nature, and may the sun kiss your face, may the waters bless your body, and may all nature sing in your presence.